Session number 5868, Heart in Mundi, part 18.
I told you on the last tape that there was three Hungarians in that cellar with us, but I should have said three Romanians, not Hungarians. But what I'll try to do tonight is to try and describe the village of Domna. Well, now, I was a prisoner of war there practically the whole of the time. That was from, I went there around about June, and I remained there from June 1917 until the end of the war and so on into December 1918. Well, now I'll try and describe the village to you. There was a main road running right through the center, but the village was quite a large village with a market square. But I think I told you on the last tape just a little of what happened there. Now, in the first place, at the outbreak of the war, the Russians broke right in to Germany. Well, that was East Prussia, of course. They broke in there and they ravaged, burnt, and damaged anything they came across. Now, this village caught it very, very badly. They burnt and destroyed quite a lot, but the Germans, they sent divisions back, naturally, to stop them getting farther into Germany, and they drove them out. And when we arrived there at this village of Domna, it was all rebuilt again, made quite a nice village, all new buildings in it that had been destroyed previously. And that was done by prisoner of war labour. Now, the village itself, I told you what they destroyed a lot. Now, the railway station, they did not destroy it. But from the railway station, as you came into the village, there was a large sawmill, very large sawmill, that had been destroyed but rebuilt. Now, in the village itself, they did not touch the church. They left the church alone, and there was a large, very large manor there. Oh, it was a big, lovely, big old-fashioned building, and they did not destroy that. But later, when I picked up the German language, they told me then that these Cossacks, the Russians, that was their cavalry regiments that took the village, Cossacks. And he said when they went into this large manor house, the officer in charge saw a very large oil painting of the lady of the manor, as you might call it, and he told his men, leave it alone. And they did not destroy that manor at all. Well, now, there was three places that they did not touch, but above all, oh dear, oh dear, the other place they didn't destroy was the village pub. They left that alone. Well, now, the rebuilding of it, I'll try and tell you now some of the buildings. Now, later, when I could pick up the language and knock about and wander about the village and look well round, I bought some old postcards. The postcards was in the shops there, and I bought some of those with the photographs of the village as it was destroyed, and it got the market square all destroyed, and different German troops standing about there. And then I also had photographs, postcard photographs, of the same market square that had all been rebuilt. Now, the buildings that had been put back, now the main building there that had been put back was a very, very large hotel. Quite a large hotel. And then, of course, there was, among the other buildings, on the corner of one of the streets, was Air Lager, what they call Lager. That's where the prisoners was. Now, perhaps I'd better tell you what a Lager means. Now, a prisoner, all your addresses were sent to prison camps or wherever they were. I always referred to as Kriegs, Gefangenen, and Lagers. Now that means that they're prisoner of war camps. Well, whether it's a large camp like we left at Dolmen, or whether it's just small groups of camps where we were, well, whenever I refer to it as a lager, you'll know what I mean. Well, now this building where we was a new one, a large new one, very similar to what you would get in the present day flats. A big corner building, and underneath was all cellars. Well, now under the cellars was where we had to sleep. We're kept under there. Well, now, perhaps I'd better describe to you some idea of what it was like there in those cellars. It was very, very large, and it wasn't too bad, too uncomfortable, because underneath I'd built sort of stands with netting, so that you sort of laid on netting, a sort of a bed. But they were quite comfortable, and we had a blanket each and made ourselves fairly comfortable, because under there was all these different nationalities, and there was, for the toilet arrangement, there was a tub brought down, you know. But it was quite convenient, you couldn't complain, and we were fairly comfortable under there. Well, now, I think I described how the buildings was roughly. As I told you, I spent all my time there. Well, now, let's get the personnel. Now, the main one, of course, was the burgomaster, or, in other words, the Lord Mayor, of the village, and he wasn't a bad chap at all. Now, the other prominent person, of course, was the village policeman. He wasn't too bad. And then there was the postman. In other words, it was not a man. It was a lady, quite attractive lady, the postwoman. And she was dressed very, very smart. I can always remember it because she had a lovely green costume. And it must have been smart because she always wore it weekends, Sundays and all, because clothing was like food. Very, very scarce. Anyway, that was the three. Now, that new big hotel, this I shall tell you a bit about this later, because he was a very nasty man. That big hotel was managed by a chap out the army, German army, and he was a sergeant in the German army. And he always was wearing this army uniform. Didn't matter when you saw him, but he was full of all discipline, full of it. But I'll tell you some little tales about him later on. He wasn't nice at all. Now then, the other personnel was in the lager. You know what I mean by lager? Where we was, and the cellars underneath. Well, now, the one in charge, you always referred to him as the postman. So if you hear me talking in later stakes about the postman, you'll know who I mean. Well, he was the postman. He was in charge. Now, he was a very small man. Well, when I stood in front of him, I could have spit over the top of his head. And I felt like it often, because he was a bad lot. Very cruel and very nasty. Now, he had an assistant with him, was a little fat old German. He was an old man, quite old, and he was fat, and he waddled about, but he was as good as gold. He used to do the cooking and all that sort of thing. But he was a nice old man, and we got on very well with him. Well, now, that's the position of the place as I described it, and the people there. Well, now, perhaps I'd better talk now about the food. When we was at Dolman, in the large camp at Dolman in Westphalia, the food was very, very bad, as I've told you before. Well, now here it was much, much better. But it was far, far short of being able to keep your life comfortable. Now, at breakfast time, when we got up in the morning, you had a bowl of coffee, which of course always the same, no sugar and no milk, just coffee. Or it wasn't coffee, of course, it was ground corn of some sort to make it black. But that was your drink. But we had a jolly good lump of bread. Now, that bread they issued us with there was, I should say, two or perhaps three times larger than the one we had at Dolman in Westphalia. Now, then you had your bread and your coffee in the morning. Now, dinner time, when you had your dinner there, that was much better than Dolman, because you had your bowl and a spoon. You had that everywhere almost, and just a spoon and your bowl. Well, now you had a ladle of this sauerkraut. Well, everybody lived on sauerkraut. I don't know whether you know what it is, but as near as I can tell you, in those days, and I believe it's same today, only much better, of course. That's a lot of vegetables, all sorts of vegetables, chopped up and all minced up and put in a big tub. A barrel used to come in, and they used to wallop so much of that into the copper. There was a copper there down the yard. I think it really was a sort of a cookhouse and washhouse where they done the washing in peacetime, or would do, and used to put that in the copper, this sauerkraut, load of it in the copper, fill it up with water. And to make it much better than Dolman, they sometimes put some meal in it, flour of some sort, to try and make it a little bit thicker. And a bit of grease or fat, whether it was oil, I don't know. But anyway, that was the sort of thing they used to put in. Well, now, it was very laughable. That was your dinner. Now, that was very laughable, because when you had your food, us prisoners had to line up in the yard outside and make a queue. Well, as you got to the old boy in the copper, he'd whiz his old ladle round. You had your bowl, he'd whiz his ladle round the copper, and if you were first, you done well. You had a ladle full of quite a lot of sauerkraut, and by the way, he sometimes put a few spuds in. That were marvellous. Yeah, someone mixed some spuds in, quite possible. Well, you had a bit of spud, a bit of sauerkraut, and some gravy. You didn't, well, oh, it was only water. Never mind, that went all right. Well, now, if you were second, you didn't get quite so much. And if you were third, well, your luck were dead out, because he didn't have a stir. But when he finished with the third one, he'd whiz the old label around and fetch the sauerkraut and mix it up, and so if you happened to be number four, you done well. You done all right then. You couldn't grumble if you happened. We used to struggle like hell. Sort of count number four, number eight, or something like that. You know, we used to try and fiddle it amongst these other foreign prisoners. Well, at tea time, we had a bowl of coffee again at tea time. That was your tea. Now then, I better get on and tell you a few more tales about it. Now, work. Now, we all had to work. Every prisoner had to work. And when you went to work, your pay was tuppence a day. Now, tuppence a day, I'm trying to compare old money, English money, with German money in those days. Now, we had the value of tuppence a day. On the 6 days a week, that was a shilling a week, a bob a week. Well, now, their money then was exactly the same as our money is in England. Exactly the same. You had a shilling, was a mark, exactly the same in silver. I've got them all at home now. A 2 mark was a 2 shilling. A 5 mark was the same as a 5 shilling English piece. Well, that was your wages for the week. Well, now, in the morning, this old boy used to fetch you out very early in the morning. Well, he'd line you up all in a row in the yard. Now, anyone that liked used to come and hire you for the day, 2 days, or a week. You know, such as anybody doing, there were several doing building work, or farmers, any jobs. Well, they used to come in on the Monday morning and look down the line and sort anyone out, say, all right, I'll hire him for the day or a couple of days and so on. Well, do you know, my blooming luck was dead out, because as it so happened, I think I was the biggest one of our little bunch. There was 9 of us, but I think I looked the biggest. Well, if there was any hard work, heavy work, well, I run into it. Well, now, that's what it was. Picked out, tuppence a day, and away you went to work. Well, now, following that, you can tell what a state we was in. And I'll tell you for why. There was, now, first of all, we'd had no other clothing. Our shirts was all in rags, our socks, the feet had all gone out of our socks, our shirt was in rags, our trousers and tunic were worn, any road, scruffy and dirty, but we tried to keep ourselves clean, because we used to take the shirt off and strip out in that yard summertime, and have a wash down. There was no soap. We got no soap. We'd wash down and keep ourselves as clean as we could. But that's all it was. All in rags and tatters. And we were begging and waiting for our Red Cross parcels. And because they didn't come, we'd been moved round about and we didn't get them. But oh my God. If it hadn't been when they did come, I don't know what would have happened, because there was a lot died before I reached them. Well, now, for socks, we got no socks. The tops was there, but the bottoms had gone. Well, they give us square pieces of rags. I think the term they used was fuslap or something like that. But what it meant was they give you 2 pieces of this, like a large handkerchief, bits of rag, and you had to wrap your feet in them. Well, now, that's what happened in the way of clothing and work. Well, now, there was that one in charge, as I call the postman. He wasn't a nice chap at all. Well, now, he got Pally with a young lady that lived the opposite side of the street to us. And you're only a young bit of stuff. Well, you know what I'm talking about. And he paired up with her, and she'd got a brother. Now, her brother was, he was a nasty bit of goods. He was only about 17, otherwise he'd have been called up for the army. But anyway, he used to come in and take the mickey out of us if he could. Well, one day he came in, and he'd got a camera. So he spotted me looking the biggest, spotted me and one of the Russians, and I didn't know what he meant. I knew what he meant, but I didn't know what he said, because I hadn't picked up the language by then. And he said, I want you to have your photographs taken. You're the biggest Englishman and you're the biggest Russian. So we stood there and we had our photos taken. Well, he charged us a copper or two when he'd done them. And I had several of them off of him. I sent one home to me mother. Well, when I came home after the war, me mother said, oh, God, she said, when I had that photograph of you, she said, I didn't know what to do. Well, you can tell what it looked like. It was a hell of a mess. In fact, I've got one now at home, the same. And when I got weighed, just before I were taken prisoner, I were pretty fit and strong. I weighed 12 and a half to 13 stone. Well, in that yard, there was an old weighing machine. So we weighed different ones of us. I weighed 8 stone 5 pound. I were nothing much more than a skeleton. But anyway, that's what I weighed when it come to weighing in that yard. One day when we was there was a man came in from a village close by, and I was beginning to pick up the language then. In fact, he came to me and told me that close by, in a village nearby, one of our chaps had died. Well, there must have been a small bunch of ours sent to another village. And he said if we would give him some coppers, he would have a stone put on his grave. So we all collected together, we gave him everything we'd got. Every copper we got, we gave him, and away he went. Well, it was a long time before he came back, and we kept saying, well, he's fiddled us. But anyway, he came back, and he brought a lot of photographs. And it was photographs of this grave. And he'd put a small stone on it, and it was engraved. Well, when young Ashley, the little boy who looks after me, came last night, I asked him to read it for me, what was on that stone. And as near as I can remember, it said, in memory of Private T. Snelling, West Surrey Regiment, erected by his comrades in captivity in 1917. Yes, that's what he read to me, and that was on it. Well, now, I suppose his relatives must have been informed. They always do through the Red Cross once they're notified. But I thought, since I wish I'd have sent a photo of it to the relatives, but I didn't. I ought to have done, but I didn't. Well, now, there's many, many things I can tell you that happened in that village that it'll take years to tell you the lot, I'm sure. But now, I told you about that man in charge of that new hotel. He was a sergeant in the army. Well, now, I've told you on earlier tapes, I believe, that NCOs have to be saluted the same as an officer. Well, now, I was going down the street, I was working then on a building with an old carpenter just at that time, and I used to be allowed then to go down and report to where you was working without anyone coming with you. Well, I was wandering down the street from the lager, down by this hotel, and he came out walking along the pavement. I was walking along the pavement. When he got to me, he pushed me off the pavement into the road and started shouting at me, made me salute him. I knew what he meant. He beckoned to me to salute. Well, I saluted him and away I went. When I got back to the lager after working, That person, he wasn't a nice one at all, I've told you. Well, I'll tell you a lot about him later. He said, he sent for me, he said, well, I knew what he meant. When you meet him in the street, that sergeant, he said, always salute him and get off the path and let him go by. I thought, well, all right. I said, all right, that'd be all right. Well, I did do that, but there was a climax to that tale, you know, later on. I'll tell you about it later on, but it reversed completely afterwards. Well, now, while we was there in the cellar, we used to have to go out to work. Now, on this particular day, I forget which, well, I can't remember where, but we hadn't been there long. They had us all out, every prisoner there was, they had us out into the street. And we had to clean up the streets, path and brush everything, make everything all smart and clean, tidy everything up, and we couldn't make out what it was all about. But anyway, what actually happened was, after we'd cleaned it up, the old village policeman, he wasn't a bad old stick, he come along and the postman come along and bundled us all back and locked us all in. Well, we wondered what was up, but we didn't have to wait too long, because there was the people of the village lined up about, and what actually happened was the old Kaiser Bill, Kaiser William, he came there and drove through. He came there to see how they had restored the village from what it was when it was destroyed. That was why he came, and we had to laugh, because I think that's the only motor car I ever saw in Germany, and yeah, I knocked about a bit. And anyway, he came along, and we were looking out the cellar. At the end, there was a great big grating at the end of the cellar, just above the level of the pavement. We used to look through that. Well, as he came by, old Yorkie in his usual form, we were looking there, and old Yorkie said, oh, blimey, he said, look, he said. There were some of the top notchers walking along this slow-going car, walking along the side. Old Yorkie said, blimey, look at him, he said. Look, he said. And we looked, and this chap walking behind, whoever he was, his heels was all wore down, each side, wore right down. Old Yorkie said, blimey, he said, he's worse than we are. He said, look at his shoes. I thought, well, that was a laugh. One of the Kaiser's sidelines got a bad pair of shoes on. I remember on one occasion, when we was in that cellar, that upset the whole lot of us English chaps. And I told you about those three Romanians. Well, now, on one day, the postman, we was all locked in the cellar, and he brought down an army officer as a visitor, evidently. Brought him down the cellar and told this officer who the different ones was, such as English, French, Italian, Romanian, Russians, of course, and that odd one Serb. Yes, he told him who he was, and he walked across to these three Romanians and told them. And he said, Bucharest, he said, is kaput, fetig. In other words, it's been captured, it's finished, and it belongs to us. We've taken it over. Well, now, what upset us chaps? One of these Romanians, he put both his hands up in the air and shouted, hooray, hooray, hooray. And, oh, blimey. You fancy, that was the capital of Romania had been captured by the Germans, and he shouted, "Hooray, hooray!" Oh dear, oh dear. Well, do you know, when that officer went out, we went and called them all the buggers we could think of. But you fancy, hooray, when your own capital has been captured. And, well, all the time after that, none of us had got any time for them at all. And I'll tell you many tales about them later. And we had that little, not little, he was a lovely, fine bloke,